Good morning, B. Do you realize we are recording this on the Ides of March, March the 15th?
Which means?
Well, everybody always talks about the Ides of March, and I was like, it's something to do with Rome and Romans. I looked it up. It is the 74th day of the Roman calendar, which corresponds to March the 15th.
Right.
And it was marked by several religious observances. I'm not reading the notes very well. Anyway, and it was a deadline for settling debts in Rome. So if you have debts to settle, today's a good day to do that, I guess. But it's also notorious. It's the date of the assassination of Julius Caesar, a turning point in Roman history.
Yeah, I'll never forget. In Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, they talk about beware the Ides of March. That's a portent or something that is told either to Julius Caesar before it happens, or it's something that somebody says afterwards. Fascinating stuff.
It is fascinating stuff. And now we're going to move on to this week's episode, which we hope is fascinating stuff as well. In fact, that might be the title of this episode. Welcome to the Garden Angelus, where we talk about flowers, veggies, and all the best dirt. I'm Carol Michael from Indianapolis, Indiana, where I have a suburban garden measured in square feet. It's about a third of an acre.
And I'm Dean Ash from Guthrie, Oklahoma, where I garden an acre and a half out of 7.5 acres in the country.
We call ourselves Garden Angelus because we are evangelists for gardening. We love gardening and we want others to love it too.
Yes, we do. And we aren't afraid to spill the beans and tell all of our gardening secrets, the good, the bad, and even the ugly. But that's enough of who, what, when, where. Let's move on to this week's episode. How was your garden this week? You said that you have a busy week.
I did have a busy week. So I went back to the greenhouse. I got some snapdragons, a variety called Snaptini, which grow only 6 to 8 inches tall, and they're less dependent on day length for blooming. So they keep blooming in my garden most of the summer into fall. And actually, I had to go back to the secret house where she has stuff that's not put out for sale yet because they hadn't started blooming. So she knows from experience, people are going to go, what's that?
Yeah. Yeah, they don't even put them out yet because people want to buy them in bloom.
So I bought the Snaptinis and then some Alyssum, and I put those at the ends of the vegetable garden beds. And yes, they'll be fine even when it gets cold. That's not a problem. I accidentally bought another flat of pansies. Not accidentally. I meant to. For my wheelbarrow planter, I got some Frizzle Sizzle.
That was pretty.
And then
Which Frizzle Sizzle did you get?
It's the blue one. I don't remember the name.
Lemon berry. I have a picture of it this week. No?
It's the blue one.
Well, lemon berry is blue and yellow, so I don't know.
But maybe it is. I'll have to go back and look. And then I bought another flat of violas. These are just some purple blotch, I think they're called, maybe. I don't remember.
Like my orange blotch.
Yeah, but these are violas.
Oh, yeah, mine are pansies. But they're cousins anyway. But keep going.
But anyway, Wednesday was a beautiful day, and I got those planted at the ends of the vegetable garden beds and in the planters. My new patio table and chairs arrived. I thought it was going to be on a pallet that they would just drop off at the curb. And the guy said, no. He says, I'll put it up by the garage. He says, where do you want it? You want it in the garage? I says, well, actually, I'm going to haul it to the back. And he says, I'll help you take it to the back. So he helped me take all the boxes back there, which was very nice of him. He said, you're my last delivery. I don't care. I said, I read you only get 15 minutes. And he says, don't worry about it. So anyway, put the table together. I had to put one chair together. The other chairs all came ready to go. So that was wonderful. And it'll last forever. It's that Pollywood stuff.
Yeah. Won't ever go bad.
So while I was out there, I checked out my winter sown seeds. And it looks like I will have purple magic broccoli to grow because those seedlings came up. That was an All-America Selections winner from last week. So, anyway, and then we had some rain, and then it was cold, and now it's cold, and it's, so I don't know. What about you in the garden this week?
So it was warm all week until today, and we are recording this on Friday, the 15th. And so, it's quite chilly out there, but right before our episode, I had planted last week my nasturtiums outside and my calendula at the ends of my potager, like the center part. But I had one row of nasturtiums that I hadn't planted yet because they weren't up as far, different variety. And they didn't have very good germination, but I got 5 or 6 plants out of it, which is all I needed. So today I ran out there right beforehand and planted them and watered them in. So I did that. And then I've watered the greenhouse. I planted out some other cold weather flowers. I gave away my lemon trees to my friend and she came and picked them up. And I'm still cutting back and feeding roses. I also planted 3 out of 5 roses in pots. And I need to either go buy some pots or use some of my pots off my deck. But I'm going to go look because I might just use some pots off my deck this year. Let's see. I have an Instagram reel about one of the roses that I planted in a pot, a great big glazed pot. I did a little light work in the garden. I had a flare, which a flare is like when your body gets all upset with histamines. So I only did a little light work in the garden yesterday, you know, because we're not supposed to do too much exercise, especially when we're flushing. I have such a weird deal. Okay. And so let's see, I could never do. And then that's about it. I mean, I've just been doing some little things here and there.
That sounds like spring. You do some little things here and there. Every once in a while, you have a little burst of energy, but let's play favorites.
I'm behind, but it's okay. Yes, let's do.
So my favorite is I walked around to the side of the house, the east side, and the earliest blooming violets in my garden, which I think are Viola Jooi, J-O-O-I, or blooming like crazy over on that east side. And they usually do start blooming sometime in March, but it seems like they're maybe a few days early. But I had planted seeds of different varieties of violets years and years ago. And not all of them survived, but these did. And I thought they were one thing. And now I think that they're really this other thing. And the common name is Transylvanian violet, but they're low to the ground and they have little pinkish purple flowers. I put them as the featured flower on my garden blogger's Bloom Day post today. So I'll put a link.
I saw that.
See that. They're beautiful.
They are.
How about you?
Okay. In my garden right now, I bought a new bur oak tree. The bur oak is the one that produces the great big acorns, the giant ones. And I didn't look up its Latin name, but it's Quercus something. Anyway, they're native. And I ran down to, I want to plant it outside our bedroom window, kind of where it can really get big and spread, because I lost an Austrian pine in the fire and I want to knock that down and plant it. And I actually bought it from Native Plants OKC. He had some nice big ones. I think it cost me about $100. Bill's sister, Carla, who passed away from cancer in, I believe, 2020. She had a big, beautiful bur oak that was in her front yard. It was beautiful, old, venerable bur oak. And so I'm planting this tree in her memory. And that's my favorite thing. And then my second favorite thing is my frizzle sizzle lemon berry violas or pansies, whatever they are. And they're doing really well. I planted them last fall and I featured them on my story. And I'll send you a photo so you can put it in the newsletter.
That sounds great. And I looked up bur oak while you were talking. And it is, I say Quercus. Quercus macrocarpa.
Maybe it is Quercus.
Quercus macrocarpa. Macrocarpa.
And I have a client who has 3 of them in her yard, which is a lot of bur oak, in my opinion.
It is.
Someone planted them long before she moved there. And they kind of drive her nuts with the dropping of the giant acorns. But my thought is, where I'm going to put mine, it'll be fine. You know what I mean? It won't bother anything.
Right. So. Cool.
Yay.
I love spring when we can talk about pansies and violas without you rolling your eyes at me.
I'm trying to be better about that.
All right. I'm going to do a quote talk about our flower topic.
Okay. Sounds good.
It was one of those March days when the sun shines hot and the wind blows cold, when it is summer in the light and winter in the shade. Charles Dickens, Great Expectations.
And we all know that feeling because last week there was a day where it was really cold in the shade. And then when I come out in the sun, I was sweating and I thought, this is cool.
Yeah.
So our flower this week is rediscovering marigolds, because remember last fall when I went nuts over certain marigolds that were on Carol Klein's, they were in part of her garden that she made for, I don't know if it was for Hampton Court, but one of the flower shows, and she had some. So then we found this really cool link to rediscovering marigolds.
Yeah. And that link is to John Sheeper's Kitchen Gardens. Kitchen garden seeds.
Yes.
And they They have very beautiful pictures and everything. And so I will say that marigolds are memorable to most gardeners from a young age.
Yes, because they're one of the first things people plant.
And, you know, they have a very distinctive scent.
Yes.
And here's the thing. When I was in the 70s, I remember when Burpee had that contest to get the first white marigold. And
I do too.
I looked it up. 1975, a woman named Alice Vonk in Iowa won the $10,000 prize, which was an astronomical amount of money back in 1975.
It was.
But they'd been running that contest since 1954. So it took 21 years to get a winner.
And you said that Burpee now has Snowball, which is showing out of stock. And I actually bought some, when we get to our ones that we like to do, I've got one that's a pale color too. And I'll tell what it is. I don't think it's sold out. So there are four main types of marigolds. There's the African ones, Tagetes, Erecta, and they get very tall and big.
They do.
And they are beautiful. And actually, flower farmers are using these a lot in bouquets because they make that great big puffy flower and they have a different type of foliage than other marigolds and they grow straight up and real tall. So they're cool. I like them a lot. And then you want to do the next one?
The French. Tagetes petula. And mm-hmm. I think about a petulant child. But anyway, these are not petulant. They're low growing. I love them. They are my second favorite. I think because mm-hmm, they are low growing and they just a mound of either unusual different types of flowers. A lot of them don't have as many petals as some of those African Tagetes erecta do. But I like the French.
I do too. I think they're cute. And I'm going to grow two of them this year. And then there are the cygnet ones, which are, however we pronounce this word, Tagetes. It's tenuifolia. And I don't have any cygnet ones right now.
Well, cygnet is actually my favorite. I grew the little gem mix last year, and there's lemon gem, orange gem, tangerine gem. And right before we recorded, I thought, wait a minute, I don't think I have seeds for these. So I will be getting seeds for these because they are my absolute favorite.
They are. That's interesting. So I'm looking up something really quickly because I want to know what this one marigold. Okay, so it's a hybrid. So it fits into our next section. Hybrids are a mix between the Africans, usually, and the other ones, the French. And so Big Duck Orange fits in this classification. They also have, and it was a great one in my garden last year, I have to say. I love Big Duck Orange. And it's an All-American selection from 2019.
And did you get seeds for Siam Gold 2024 winner?
I don't
know
if I did. I don't think so.
But
you know what? I need to go back and look because maybe I did.
Yeah. And so
if it's a national winner, I probably got it.
I think it is a national winner, but Siam Gold, and they describe it and they say, growing this marigold in your garden is like taking a trot around the globe. You don't have to go to the airport. Named for a former country located halfway across the world, Siam Gold has beautiful mounded foliage that produces globe-like, fully double golden flowers all season long. The large flowers are held up on top of sturdy stems and above the foliage for full color visibility. Sometimes marigold flowers are buried in foliage.
They hide. You don't want that.
Making a striking focal point in the garden. Blooms were very tight and held up all summer long. The uniformity of the plant gives a neat, tidy appearance in the garden. Siam Gold is excellent for cut flowers. No staking is needed. And you want to try this beauty for a staycation where no travel is needed.
There you go. Okay, so I'm going to go back and look at my seed keepers to see if I've got Siam Gold, because I do want to start it if I do.
Oh, you should, because I looked on the website, and on availability it says,
who knows when?
Check back later, kind of like that. Yeah.
Yeah, they can be, you know.
Coming soon.
I just am running out of places to put things, but we'll figure it out. I'm looking to see if I have any other, if I brought it out of here. No, I did not. So, oh, and I forgot to mention, I sowed a bunch of seeds last week because I'm trying to sow all my seeds. Okay. So what are your favorites?
So I said before, the cygnet one, and I think I've grown it in past years, but last year I grew it and it's just kind of like, you know what? I looked over one day and I saw this plant just covered with these beautiful yellowish orange flowers. And I thought, Signet, you are my new favorite marigold.
I've grown Lemon Gem. You had Lemon Gem listed as one of your favorite Signets. I've grown it, and I think I've grown Orange Gem. And Lemon Gem, it is beautiful, and it makes very large flowers. And then they have kind of a little greenish center, and they're just as pretty as they can be. That's a pretty yellow.
Yes, and they're not large flowers. They're small flowers.
Well, maybe I'm confusing that with something else. Maybe that was Big Duck Lemon or something. Who
knows?
Could be,
because these are smaller flowers.
I wasn't really paying that much attention, I'll be honest. I mean, I just sort of sowed marigolds and don't think about it. So it might have been Big Duck Lemon or Big Duck Yellow, whatever it is. Okay, so you like Lemon Gem, Orange Gem, Tangerine Gem.
Yeah, I'll find a seed packet of probably mixed and sow that. And I think last year I sowed them directly in the garden and just between over rambunctious weeding and other things. I didn't get great germination. So yeah. This year I'm going to sow them inside first.
I do that too.
And then transplant them, because I didn't put it in the show notes, Dee, but I bought one of those soil block makers.
Oh, did you? Good for you.
Yeah. And so you can make it, this one just makes like four. So it's not like we'll talk about
overwhelming.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a little bit, but it makes four. And I thought, well, that'll be good for like marigolds, zinnias, maybe even sunflowers, maybe not, but stuff that I just need it to germinate enough that I know I've got a good seedling, and then pop it in the garden without wasting a container.
And what I just thought about is Tithonia, the Mexican sunflower, which I bought a mix this year instead of just the straight torch orange. And I started those inside because they just need a little bit of help before I put them outside. You can direct sow them, but they take a while. And if you direct sow them too early, I find that my beautiful family of crows like to eat them, bless their hearts.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm going to do that with some of these marigolds, and also not all the zinnias, but some of the very specific zinnias that I want to maybe put in the front. So what are your favorite?
Yeah, most zinnias I do direct outside, but every once in a while I start a few inside. Okay, so one of my all-time favorites is Phyllis from Botanical Interests. It's an African marigold, but this year I'm going to grow Queen Sophia, which is a French and an AAS winner, Court Jester, which is French, and Moonlight, which is African. And Court Jester and Queen Sophia are because of the thing I told you earlier. And then Moonlight is because of Ladybug, my friend Jennifer, because she had such tall, beautiful, just so beautiful in her flower farm. And I thought, I need to do that one. So it's a really, really light yellow, almost white. And so the other thing we talked about, we were going to talk about, is how they're pretty easy to grow from seed, but if you direct sow them, it takes them a long time.
Right.
Like Tithonia, like several things. So starting them inside works better, honestly. And then I was going to say, in my climate, I don't know about your climate, but in my climate, they get spider mites sometimes. And the best way to handle this is with a strong water spray from a hose and in sprayer. And you want to get beneath the leaves, because the spider mites, that's where they like to hang out. And they suck the leaves of the plants. And you can see it because you'll have little white splotches. And if left unchecked, they'll kill your plant. So it's a very simple thing to get in there. They don't like wet. Spider mites like it hot and dry, and they kind of fly in, or I don't know, crawl in and become a problem. And then if you really rinse them off good for a week, they go away or drown or something. I don't know. And then I don't have trouble with them later in the year. But if they get hold, you know, if they take hold, oh my goodness,
yes,
it's over.
So I've seen them take hold, and this was decades ago, and it almost looked like somebody had put Saran wrap over the flowers, which was their webbing. And it was disgusting.
Yes, they have webbing too.
So we do get them here.
Yeah, that's gross.
We do get them here. But yeah,
we do too.
Don't get out a mite aside. Get out a spray of water and just keep them wet for a while.
Yeah, you don't need a mite aside. And neem is a fairly good mite aside. But about the time these show up, it's too hot to spray neem because it's an oil and it smothers them. So it's just easier to wet them off.
Yes.
By spider mites. Is that all you want to say about marigolds?
That is all I want to say about marigolds. I want you to do the next quote.
Okay. The next best thing to being wise oneself is to live in a circle of those who are. C.S. Lewis. Vegetables. We decided to talk about a book we got, which is a good book. A really good book.
Yes.
And it's called Simplify Vegetable Gardening, All the Botanical Know-How You Need to Know. More Food and Healthier Edible Plants. Veggie Gardening with a Side of Science by Tony O'Neill. And it was from Quartro, Cool Springs. And it's really good.
He goes more in depth than most do. And so from the description, it says, if you are an intermediate or advanced gardener, I would say we're intermediate or advanced, looking to level up your growing skills, Simplify Vegetable Gardening is the ideal reference for meeting your goal. Your garden will flourish with the help of Tony's growing prowess and eye-opening approach to enhancing plant health and yields that relies on a clear understanding of the interconnectedness of Earth's many systems and how they each affect plant growth.
And I was going to say that Tony O'Neill, he's on YouTube's Simplify Gardening. So you can also look at his YouTube videos, and he's written this as kind of a companion book to those videos. And I will keep this one. I will not be giving it away, because if I need to look something up, I really like his section on the atmosphere and the biosphere and the pedosphere and the hydrosphere and the list of, he's a scientist and he's also a firefighter.
Yeah. I was going to say he's a full-time firefighter. He's in the United Kingdom, but his information is universal. It's not just confined to the UK.
Which I'm really excited about.
Yeah. And one of the things about the book too, is he actually features like 81 different vegetables and stuff. And he's kind of got them grouped by family. So, and that's one of the things that you quickly learn about gardening is when you understand what family a vegetable in.
Something lives in.
It kind of tells you how to grow it a little bit, because, you think about like peppers and tomatoes are in the same plant family and they need very much the same conditions to grow.
Right.
And then
I think along with plant families, I think another thing to remember is, where does this plant grow naturally? You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, for example, this isn't vegetables, but let's look at like the dahlias, because dahlias are hot again because of flower farmers. And I get more questions about dahlias than anything else. And people go, well, aren't dahlias and zinnias kind of the same? No, they're not kind of the same. And they don't grow in the same conditions. And so dahlias grow up in the mountains of Mexico. And so they get warm, warm days and cool nights. Does that sound like Oklahoma to you?
I don't know. Does warm it cool days, down at night?
Cool nights? No, not in the summer, huh? It's hotter than Hades. So I think you can apply these same ideas to vegetables. What family are they in? Where do they grow naturally? And what are their requirements because of that?
Yeah, I think that's very interesting. And you find out that some other things, you think, I kind of knew that.
I like his whole thing about soil science and the soil food web, because that's really important. And it's something I work on with clients all the time, because they want immediate results. And the only way you can get really good results in your garden is to take your time. And that goes back to arborist chips again, and how they help create that great soil web and also help you get biodiversity and resilience. There was something else that they help with too, the right microorganisms, because, people pull up mulch and they look at it and they go, oh my gosh, there's white stuff under the mulch. I must kill it. No, that's good stuff.
That is good stuff.
That's good stuff. So there's lots of, I think this is one of the best books we've been sent on for people who are intermediate and advanced.
And the description says, starting with the why and ending with the wow, it really helps you to improve your vegetable garden performance. And so I like it too, Dee. I think it's going to be a good book to just kind of have sitting there, and I'm going to be looking at it and just reminding myself of stuff that I probably knew, but you kind of forget.
I'm going to keep it at my desk, because I'm going to put it in my little deals up here on my desk where I can see it and pull it down. Because if I have a question about something that I haven't thought about, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
I'm pretty good at this by now, but you know what? I get stumped sometimes. I wonder if Jessica worked on this book.
I'm going to have a look see.
Are you tempted to look?
I'm always tempted to look. Sometimes there's another publisher and the editor is always listed at the beginning. But in this case, the editor is kind of always maybe thanked at the end. And so
I tried to find it when you were talking and I didn't find it yet. About the author.
Conclusion.
He got in 2021, he was awarded the Ezoic Publisher of the Year Award for educational content on YouTube. Wow. That's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
He's a smart guy. And I think it's cool that he knows so much.
Yeah. And the thing too is, I think it's cool that he's a full-time firefighter.
I do too. The guy who owns Native Plants OKC is also a firefighter. I didn't know that until I went down and bought my tree the other day. And we finally met in person. And he goes, you know what? I worked that fire out by your house. And I said, no way. Huh. Of course he did, because he's an Edmond firefighter.
Well, there's a fire.
Anything else you want to say about? Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say there's a fire station down the road, down the main
here
road.
Too.
And they always have a nice little vegetable garden beside the firehouse that the firefighters can tend during their, while they're waiting for the alarms to go off.
Mm-hmm.
Which reminds me, the other day, I'm driving down this road and sirens, fire trucks coming toward us. So I kind of pull over and wait. I pulled over two drives before the house that they actually went to.
Whoops.
For the fire. And then you could see these two, this couple out waving them over and smoke pouring out. And so anyway, got turned around and heading back another way and saw two more fire trucks. And the good news is I think based on the Citizen app, the fire was contained to the front room area. And I don't think that it didn't take the whole house out.
That's good.
We are
That's
a long way thing. From vegetable gardening. Anyway, that is the
yes,
book.
We are.
Simplify Vegetable Gardening, All the Botanical Know-How You Need to Grow More Food and Healthier Edible Plants by Tony O'Neill of YouTube's Simplify Gardening. And I went out and subscribed to his channel, by the way.
Yeah, I did too, because I think he's great.
That's good. All right.
As if I'm going to watch some more stuff on gardening, but I might. You never know.
You never know.
All right. So you never know. So you want to do that next quote?
I do want to do that next quote. Of course, anyone who truly loves books buys more of them than he or she can hope to read in one fleeting lifetime. A good book resting unopened in its slot on a shelf, full of majestic potentiality, is the most comforting sort of intellectual wallpaper. And that is by David Quammen. He is a science mm-hmm. and nature writer and author of numerous articles and books. Seems like he puts one out about every 2 years.
Wow, he's amazing then. So on our bookshelf this week, we're going to talk about The Cut Flower Handbook by Lisa Marie Ziegler. And we asked for review copies of this book because we have both met Lisa, and I've talked to her at length because she and I think we both first met her through GardenCom. And then I also was on a speaking, you know, I went to speak for Mother Earth News when my book came out, and Lisa had a booth and she was a speaker there too when we were in, oh gosh, North Carolina. You know, where the Biltmore is. We were there. So that was fun. And she's a very sweet person. I think she has a lot of passions about growing flowers.
Yes.
And just life.
And I'm going to read you.
She said that she just, are you going to read that part where she talks about she really just wanted to be with her dogs and
No, I'm going to read you the dedication for this book.
Okay.
To the grandmas that shared their love of gardening. Grandma, your peonies still bloom each spring. You'd love them. Thank you.
I love that because, of course, my grandmother very much influenced me in gardening. And I think about her a lot. And there are things I grow just because she had them. And that makes me so, so happy. So she has become, since that time when she and I had that conversation and when we met her in GardenCom, she's become, Instagram famous.
Yes.
And she wrote a previous book and then she wrote this book. This book has been so popular and came out at just the right time. It is sold out and they're already in the second or third printing. And I saw she has a YouTube video. I'm stuck on YouTube because of the last book. An Instagram video where she is showing how many books she was signing. And they just had it set up as an assembly line. It was really pretty darned amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty unbelievable.
And I'm proud of her and happy for her.
So
you need to say that again because I talked over you.
It was pretty darn amazing.
It was. So there are lots. I'm actually giving a talk, and I was going to bring this up later, but I'm giving a talk about how to grow your own cut flower garden for the Oklahoma City Museum of Art. And I learned a lot of what I know about flower gardening from Lisa, because I have her other book.
So the book is divided into four sections. So the first section is the cut flower concept.
Yep.
The three season annual cutting garden and the cutting garden's lifeline harvesting. And then the second part is the basics of growing cut flowers, best bed location and preparation, starting from seed indoors and in the garden, planting and caring for the garden. Mm-hmm. Part three is the cool season hardy annuals. And part four is the warm season tender annuals. And I really, really like this book because I should grow more flowers for cutting than I do. I mean, I'm kind of stuck on zinnias. Right. And this gives you so many good ideas and so much information. And even though, I'm not going to turn my backyard into a cut flower farm, though there are people around here. I met somebody last spring who said she turned her backyard into cut flowers and she was selling them at a local farmer's market through the season, which was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of cool because I was able to tell her about my favorite greenhouse, courtyard and greenhouse, which because she had lived just kind of outside its periphery. And so I said, when you show up, tell them Carol sent you because they like that. And she did. And she bought some stuff. She grows a lot of her own stuff from seed. So there wasn't tons of plants she needed, but she found some stuff there that she said was notoriously hard to get when you just wanted a small quantity, you know, because even Courtney said she stopped growing the frizzle sizzle violas because she said, you would not believe how many they told me I had to buy because they don't make it part of their regular line. And she says, I said, no, Carol will have to do without those. They saw the frizzle sizzle pansies. But anyway.
You know, they also are very slow to germinate and do what you want them to do. So I tend to buy mine from under the sun. Anyway, the book is great. Whether you're going to grow stuff for yourself or you're going to become a flower farmer. And if you are going to become a flower farmer, God love you because it is a hard job. I know several people who are flower farmers.
But before everybody says, oh, well, I'm not going to be a cut flower farmer or gardener, so I can just skip this.
Home gardening,
because like she says, when you grow cut flowers, you can cut them, you know, think about it, spring, summer, fall, avoiding bouquets, which when you buy a bouquet in the grocery store, let me tell you folks, before you put your face too close to that to breathe it in, they've used a lot of pesticides to grow those things. So be careful.
Well, and they even, I know of one local flower farmer who sells her bouquets. It's Bear Creek. She sells her bouquets at Whole Foods and it says on there local and all this other stuff, right? But if you're just buying regular flowers, if you go to smell those roses, they don't smell like roses. They smell like chemicals. And I'm not picking on people. I mean, chemicals, I don't have any judgment. I try to do everything non-chemical, but the amount of sprays and stuff they put on roses is really kind of horrifying.
So the other thing is there's so many beautiful photographs in this book too. So you can visualize what you're doing.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm growing Bells of Ireland this year for the first time.
Well, she probably has that in the book, so you can check it out.
It is in there. Jennifer gave me some plants, so I'm going to do it. And then she also has a lot of her favorites of certain varieties, like a Rudbeckia, for example, which one grows tall and straight or which one's stubby, things like that. And she also tells you how to do the netting over the flowers so that you can get nice, tall, straight stems and not have to prop everything up. And so it's a very practical book, and it doesn't surprise me because Lisa is a practical romantic.
That's a very good description of her. So we should mention that this book just came out, and it is already out of print, but more coming. So, you know, you can, I don't know if you can pre-order a second printing, but we should mention that the other book she wrote with Cool Springs Press was Vegetables Love Flowers, Companion Planting for Beauty and Bounty. That was 2018. And you mentioned her dog.
Yep.
She's got a book. And I believe this one was self-published.
The book is back on Amazon. I just looked it up.
Okay.
So you can get it now at this moment. So if people want it, keep going.
So I think she self-published this. It's called Farm Dog Babs, The Sweet Brown-Eyed Girl, book about her dog.
Oh.
And then there are a couple of others from before then, but So she's not, this is not her first book by any stretch.
Not her first rodeo.
But it's, I think it's going to be one of the most popular books because, like you said, this is the perfect time because cut flower, growing your own cut flowers is big, big, big. And thanks to social media and Instagram and showing people that how it can be done, this is the book to get.
Yeah, that's been one of the best things that's ever happened. And it's really fun to follow her on Instagram because she gives very good practical tips in her beautiful Southern accent.
Oh, yes. She's from Virginia.
Yeah.
So that is the Cut Flower Handbook, Select Plant, Grow, and Harvest Gorgeous Blooms by Lisa Mason Ziegler. We want to congratulate her on a very fine book.
Okay, you ready for the next quote?
I am.
And so the spring buds burst, and so I gaze, and so the blossoms fall, and so my day. This is by Onitsuka, and we have no idea who he or she was, and we were not able to give, we weren't able to find anything, but we love the quote. So
yeah,
I love that.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. And our dirt, you found our dirt.
So the dirt, let me see. Oh, there's an article on, I'm subscribed to this newsletter from History Facts. .org, and they have a really interesting article about five ways that your vegetables and fruits evolved over time. And they talk about what did, like, carrots used to always be white, yellow, and purple. And when the orange ones came out, they have a picture of watermelon. It used to be much, much different. They have it from a painting of all things. And so
interesting.
I just thought this was an interesting article and one that we could share with our listeners if they wanted to look at it, because it is, you know, it is unbelievable. Peaches used to be really hard and less sweet, and the bananas were almost inedible in their original form. So it just kind of shows that there's been a lot of transition in the vegetables that we eat and how they've evolved into what we actually eat today. So I just thought it was interesting.
Right. That is interesting. So that's our dirt. And now, are we going to move on to rabbit holes?
I'm going to do a quote for that.
Do we have a quote? Oh, there it is.
And the day came when the risk to remain tight in a bud was more painful than the risk it took to blossom. And that is by Anais Nin. I don't know if I said that right.
Anais Nin.
So her real name was Angela Anais Juana Antalina Rosa Eldomaria Ninya Camille. So she was a French-born American diarist, 1903 to 1977. She probably would fit in pretty well with the swans of Fifth Avenue.
Yeah.
American diarist, essayist, novelist, and writer of short stories and erotica, which is probably why we've never read her. Born to Cuban parents in France, she was the daughter of the composer Joaquin Nin and the classically trained singer Rosa Comel. Spent her early years in Spain and Cuba, 16 years in Paris, and the remaining half in the United States, where she became an established author.
Yeah, she's very famous.
I had never heard of her.
I think I read one of her books in college. That was a long time ago. Okay, so my rabbit hole is short this week. I've been researching low histamine diets because I have to do that. And it's a bit overwhelming, but they hope that it'll help with my flares, because yesterday morning I got up and I was beet red from my head all the way to my chest. And I'm still a little red, but not bad. And so I was like, okay, what the heck is this? And so low histamine diets are supposed to help with that. We'll see what happens. All right. What did you do? Oh, I know what you did.
So I went and saw the movie Cabrini, which I said last week I was going to go right after we recorded. Loved it. And of course, I was delighted that there's a little story about Mother Cabrini related to her young life that involved violets.
Yeah.
I will leave a link to that so that our listeners can go figure out what was that story. Anyway, this week I'm going to go see the movie One Life, which is the story of Nicholas Nicky Winton, a young London broker who, in the months leading up to World War II, rescued over 600 children from Nazi-occupied Czechoslovakia. And Anthony Hopkins plays Sir Nicholas Winton in his older years, reminiscing about what he did in World War II.
His mother's played by Helena Bonham Carter, too.
Yeah. But there's a
Which is cool.
Yes. There's a very famous clip on YouTube where they show the real-life Sir Nicholas Winton sitting down at the taping of a TV show, and the woman says, is there anybody in the audience who was affected by or saved by Sir Nicholas Winton? And of course, the entire audience is made up of people that he saved, or that they saved the parents or whatever. So it was very overwhelming. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. But anyway,
those are both movies I want to see too. I really do. I've been watching For One Life quite a while because I saw a little clip where Helena Bonham Carter is trying to talk a British prime minister or something into helping them figure it out, you know, get people out. And it's a very moving scene.
Yes. So that's next week. I've already got my tickets. Good anyway, then of course I was down another rabbit hole for Ella Porter McKinney, another lost lady. She wrote Iris in the Little Garden, and I went down two rabbit holes. First of all, she was exasperatingly hard to find much information on, but I found that she went to the Glasgow Normal School in Glasgow, Kentucky. And I thought, what's a normal school?
And what is that?
Well, it turned out that this would have been in the late 1800s, as people were migrating west, there just was a shortage of teachers to teach students, and there weren't enough of the schoolmasters of old, I guess. And a lot of the schools, it would be like a local storekeeper or whatever would do it in his spare time, or a farmer might do it in the winter time when they didn't have much else to do. So they started these normal schools to train teachers for grammar schools. And then a lot of the normal schools ended up becoming teaching colleges. So the Glasgow Normal School in Kentucky became Western Kentucky College, which is now Western Kentucky University.
Cool.
And I think there's a college in Indiana. Indiana State started out as a normal school. So I learned something there. Also,
I did too.
Then I also learned about this. There's an iris called Iris persica, which is from Persia, I guess, wherever that
Persia,
was.
Which is Iran. Uh-huh.
Yes. But anyway, I found this because there was a quote from Elizabeth Lawrence, famous Southern Garden writer, that she had referenced Ella's book, Iris in the Garden, about how this little iris, everybody seemed to have one that came from a garden in Tennessee. And, you know, she was writing to somebody who's had died out. But anyway, she said it wasn't common in the trade. And so that is still the case, because I looked it up and I thought, well, it sounds like a pretty little iris, really low to the ground. But anyway, and then I was down a couple other iris rabbit holes looking up like Juno irises and different types. And anyway, that was enough. I never found a picture of the woman, which is incredible to me. But I don't know.
Weird.
I even looked for graduation pictures from the Glasgow Normal School from 1886, the year she graduated. I was looking for I found a picture of the building, but I couldn't find, like, maybe they took a picture of the whole class.
Like a group picture. Yeah.
And, you know, it might exist, but out on the internet, I'm kind of limited to what I can find on the internet. It's not like I can drive down to Western Kentucky and say, do you have any archives from when the normal school was in existence?
Yeah.
So anyway.
I guess you could call. But you know, you only have so much time to spend on this.
That's maybe right.
When you write your book, you could call them and say, hey, I'm looking for this. Because I know that's how that lady who has chronic fatigue syndrome did Seabiscuit. And, you know, she's made relationships with all these people and she also did the one about Louis, whose plane went down and unbroken. Laura Hildebrand. I can't believe I can remember that. Anyway, she's one of my heroes and she has CFS and she's got it so bad that she can't leave her house. So I know she calls people and emails and people send her stuff. So,
well, that is good. Thought. Because the other thing I couldn't find two other things. Her birth date. What? I know the birth year because they're tombstone. And it was maddening to me because they referred to her husband's sons, who were like 11 years older than her, as her sons. And it's like, no, those are her stepsons. There's no way an 11-year-old. Right. And her husband was 19 years older than her. And I'm like, well, what's the story there? You know, how does this girl from
she's the second wife.
Yeah, she's a second wife, but he was from Tennessee. She's from a little town in Kentucky, but just north of the Tennessee border. And anyway.
Yeah, how did they meet?
I don't know. And I don't know what kind of doctor he was. I thought, well, maybe he taught at the normal school And then they moved to New Jersey for the rest of their lives. It's like, why'd they move to New Jersey? Did he teach at a college there? Or, you know, anyway, it was just like, Ella, you are mysterious.
Hard to find.
I found enough. I found enough.
So shall we go on to garden commissions?
We shall.
Okay, you want me to go first?
Yes, please.
Okay, so I need to plant my cherry tomato seeds. And because of this low histamine diet thing, I have to cut tomatoes out of my diet for the time being. But I'm doing that quest to find the sweetest cherry tomato. So I'm gonna do those for my daughter, my granddaughter. And I mean, I may be able to introduce tomatoes back into my diet later. So I'm gonna plant these for my granddaughter, and I might eat a few to taste them, but not too many. And then I won't be planting the big slicers this year because that would be really tempting for me. And then I'm going to sow my marigold seeds, my pepper seeds, which I got to check about peppers because some peppers are high histamine too. And I bought 2 Vigo garden planters to replace some of my fabric pots that got partially burned in last spring's fire. I was able to use them last summer, but now they're falling apart. And I don't have an affiliate link for Vigo because you and I looked at their affiliate agreement, remember? And we were both like, that's a lot of hoops to jump through.
It is.
To just get an affiliate link. I mean, it'd be different if they were sending me a bunch of product, maybe, but no. So I just bought 2, and you'll be happy to know I bought them in green because I thought that would be really pretty.
That would be pretty.
And then I brought it up earlier, but I'm speaking at the Oklahoma City MOA on April 14th at 11 a.m., which is a Sunday. Not my favorite day, but I'll go to 7:30 mass in the morning and then head over there and speak. So I'm just telling people ahead of time in case they want to get tickets to the deal.
Cool deal.
How about you?
So the weather is cooling down a bit after some probably record warm days. So, but Sunday, March 17th, traditional day to sow peas, and the soil is definitely warm enough. So I'm going to sow peas. That's the day I'm also going to the Flower and Patio Show. Probably later in the week, I'll sow some of the seeds outside for the spring greens, lettuces, spinach, radishes, that type of thing. And then I'm going to start peppers indoors because they take a little bit longer than tomatoes. And I feel like I said that last week that I was going to do it this weekend, but now it's, you know, so I'm definitely going to do it. I also need to pull stuff out from under the tarp on the patio and start setting it up for Easter. And then we wanted to mention that we are both members of GardenCom.
Yep.
And it is a great organization for anybody that writes, speaks, YouTubes, Instagrams, does anything related to communicating about gardening. And so on Thursday, the 21st, I'm doing a webinar on Introduction to Writing on Substack, and it's free to GardenCom members. So if any of our listeners are doing that kind of thing and they're like, well, could GardenCom be for me? Let us tell you that when we both started out, we did like hardly any garden communicating, but we had blogs, we were interested. And a lot of the connections we made in GardenCom is why we are here today. So think about joining.
All the people we say are our friends are all from GardenCom.
Yes.
Almost.
Yes.
Some bloggers too. So that's pretty cool.
But if you join, you can, and this episode, the newsletter will be out on Tuesday, episode on Wednesday. But if you join by Thursday, then you can participate in the free webinar that I'm doing Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern.
I'm actually 7 p.m. I wish those weren't always at dinner time, but you know, so it's when you guys have to do it because you're in EST.
That's right.
Instead of Central Standard Time. Okay. And then you have your eclipse update.
Thanks for bringing that up, Dee. I thought maybe she'd try to slip over that one. So
no, I didn't.
I found an extremely long-range forecast. I mean, this was last week. Forecasting sunshine in Indianapolis on April the 8th. Now, I don't know if this is a bunch of PR nonsense. Like, let's not talk about that cloudiness. We got to get people to fill up these hotels and go to these big events at the Motor Speedway and the Art Museum and Connor Prairie Farm and all these places. We got to get people out. So let's talk about sunshine. Anyway, I did find a very long range thing that said forecast for sunshine on April the 8th. Good enough.
Hey.
And that is good enough for this episode, don't you think? I'll wrap us up.
It's a good episode.
Thank you for listening to The Garden Angelus. I hope you've hit that subscribe button so you don't miss a single episode. We publish every week on Wednesdays at 12 a.m. Eastern Time.
And if you listen to Apple Podcasts, we'd appreciate a 5-star review. It helps us get noticed by others. Could you also share our podcast with your friends? Word of mouth is still the best way to get the word out there.
And be sure and check out our show notes for links for more information about today's topics, plus links to our own websites.
And subscribe to our Substack newsletter, The Garden Angelist at Substack.com, also linked to in our show notes. If you do, you'll get a link to listen to the podcast a day early.
If you want to help support us, use those affiliate links. If you buy something after clicking through on them, we earn a small commission and it costs you nothing.
Or you can set up a monthly subscription through Buzzsprout or make a one-time donation through PayPal.
Thank you to everyone who has done so.
It was lovely to chat with all of you over the garden gate. Bye until next week.
Bye, everybody.